Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judith Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, or at least hope to do, amicable divorces. Well, in the spirit of hoping to do everything amicable in my divorce business, I had two mediations recently that made me want to do another episode on how you can ruin a really good mediation and how you can make it better. But we really can self-sabotage a mediation for a settlement agreement that could easily be dealt with between the couple without having to spend more money on attorneys. But sometimes it's just not possible. And there are reasons why. So I want to go through what you can do to ruin a good mediation and then how you can turn that around. How you can ruin a good mediation: by lying, by yelling, by insulting, by not getting legal advice, by overreaching in the negotiation, by not being prepared with support documentation, by not going through the emotional divorce first before you go through the legal divorce, which is filing, and the level of expectation of the mediator, which is completely wrong in most cases. So let me run this down. In terms of lying, lying doesn't get you anywhere but in an attorney's office or in a courtroom. Lying doesn't work. And people start out by lying sometimes. And I don't mean this is, makes you a horrible person, because it doesn't. But when people are fearful, when people go into protective mode, they start lying. They lie by either changing the facts and the sequence of events that led up to the divorce, or they lie by omission, by leaving out some very valuable information that you need in order to create a good settlement. And the other person knows you're lying. Your soon-to-be ex-spouse knows you're lying. The mediator just doesn't know you're lying initially. Because some people, well, how would they lie? You know, some people may be really good at lying, but a mediator needs to listen to both people talk so that they can kind of figure out where the real truth points are. But lying never, ever works. And I am telling you that when people lie and they go from trying to do an amicable divorce to a lawyer's office, and if they don't even tell their own lawyers the truth, it'll come out in court and everybody will be embarrassed. You will have no credibility and the decisions will not be in your favor. This is typically the way it goes. You know, there are extraordinary situations where you may have a sociopathic liar, somebody with personality disorders. Okay, slightly different situation. You still, if you're not the one having these challenges, their mental health challenges, then you all the more reason have to be truthful. You have to be the one rooted in reality, rooted in truth, rooted in responsibility to the truth. But I cannot impress upon you more how important it is not to lie. Number two, yelling. I cannot tell you the number of mediations that start by people yelling. And why? Because you're creating the same conversation in the mediator's office that you create in your own homes, at the kitchen table, in the car, in the kids' schoolyard, you know, when you meet there. Yelling never works. Yelling, first of all, doesn't make you look good. It makes you look like you can't control yourself or that you want to bully the other person. It's horrible to listen to somebody yell. Absolutely beyond belief, horrible. The person yelling is not making a good impression on the mediator. And the person yelling is not going to engage the other spouse in a cooperative, successful negotiation. you really can't yell. And number three, you can't be insulting. Yelling and insulting are all part of the same issue. But you can't be insulting to your soon-to-be ex-spouse. You can't tear them down. You can't diminish them. Again, it makes you look horrible if you're the perpetrator. And then the other spouse may be used to being a victim and either lets it happen or just remains silent, because what's the point? What's the point in yelling back? But when I have two yellers in the room, it's disastrous. There's nothing a mediator can get done when two people are yelling. I remember this one mediation I did several years ago. That's the only way they knew how to speak was yelling. They both raised their voices. And whenever I tried to intervene and get them to calm down, they both looked at me and said, "We don't want you to interject, Judith. We'll handle this. We just want you to sit there and document our conversation." Now, that was the most extreme situation I've ever been in. And by the way, they eventually got divorced with my office. Shockingly, believe me, I did not see this coming. And that was really a lesson to me that I, as a mediator, have to be flexible. If both people want to yell and they're good at yelling and insulting, maybe that's the only way they know how to dialogue. I'm really talking about when one person yells and the other person doesn't. And now we have an adverse, negatively dominant human being in the room. I can't do anything with that. The other party can't do anything with that. That's lawyer time, unless the other party can stop yelling and insulting. Number four, not getting legal advice before the mediation. You absolutely, without a doubt, will never be successful in a mediation, especially if you have a lot of assets and debts to deal with, and a co-parenting plan, and child support and spousal support. If you don't get legal advice, you will spend quite a lot of time and money in mediation, and you might not get anywhere, or it just may take you a lot longer to get where you need to be. But legal advice is essential. When people don't get legal advice, they don't get legal advice because they either don't want to spend the money or they don't trust attorneys, they're fearful of attorneys, or for some weird reason, they think they're being disloyal to the other spouse because they're actually educating themselves with the law. You absolutely, without a doubt, no questions asked, need to get legal advice. It is the only smart way to go about a mediation, because you're going to start asking for things like point number five, overreaching in the negotiation, if you don't get legal advice. So here's where people like to get legal advice, and here's where it shows up in the overreaching in the mediation. They go to their friends. They go to their friends who have been divorced, and they ask their friends what they did. Can their friends share what their settlement was? And then their friends, of course, give them legal advice. I put the word legal in quotations. Your friend's divorce is not the same as your divorce. It may look like it on the outside, but the tone, the character, and nature of the marriage is a backdrop to the mediation. So that's going to change from couple to couple. And are they really going to tell you what each person makes for a living? Are they really going to tell you about all the deductibles that go into the calculation of child and spousal support? I mean, there's a lot that they're not even going to know to tell you that's an essential part of how they got to their settlement. But I see people overreaching. Well, this is just what I want. Okay, that's great. But do you know how far outside the law you are? And as a mediator, we can go as far outside the law as you want, as long as the other person wants to go there with you. But if the other person doesn't want to go there with you, be willing to compromise. You're going to have to. Or you're going to end up with attorneys or court, and the compromise is going to be given to you, and you're going to spend a lot more money, and you're going to be exhausted. But overreaching doesn't work. Now, you can ask for more than the law accommodates in your state if you can support it properly. We'll go into that with the remedies for a good mediation. Number six, not being prepared with support documentation for the value of the assets and debts that you need to divide, or for the issues you see coming up in a co-parenting schedule. I do not hold mediations until people exchange their disclosure forms, and even then they don't bring them in. A lot of people do. You know, I have to give my clients credit. A lot of people bring their disclosures in, but I have to tell you, a lot of people don't even open the disclosure forms up when I exchange them. And they'll say something like, was I supposed to? Yes, you're supposed to. You're supposed to look at the other person's disclosure forms, look at your own disclosure forms, look at all the support documentation that was provided with the disclosure forms, and bring it all in. And here's something really important that people don't bring in, and it really bogs the mediation down. If the house is not going to be divided, and one person wants to buy the other person out, or at least refinance in their own name, you need to call the lender first. You need to bring in support documentation from the lender so that we can talk about how long it will take until you can refinance. That's one of the biggest issues in documentation. But bring in all the documentation you have, whether it's things that are calendared, financial statements, emails and texts that you've received from the other spouse that you want to address because they're not helpful, they're hurtful. Bring in everything. People that don't bring in support documentation, we can't really do anything until you do. And then we have to schedule another mediation. Not that I mind, but you may mind. So bring in everything, be organized. Number seven, people have not dealt with the emotional divorce before they enter mediation and the legal divorce. So if you haven't listened to my podcast before today, please look at some of the episodes that talk about the emotional divorce versus the legal divorce. The emotional divorce is so important to get through before you enter the formal legal divorce arena. Because if you haven't gone through the emotional divorce, here's what happens. You lie, you yell, you're insulting. You haven't gotten legal advice yet, or you did so long ago you actually forgot what they said. And you'll overreach in the settlement because you're collecting emotional injustices. If you haven't gone through the emotional divorce, and I have you in a mediation, it'll be obvious. And then I will suggest at times, depending if I can, if time allows, I will suggest we put the divorce on pause and give you both time to heal and grieve. If you don't heal and grieve before you get into mediation, all of the wounds will be the backdrop to the negotiation. And you're coming from a negative place, and that won't work. You will ruin the mediation that way. And number eight, the expectation of the mediator to make decisions for you and explain the law to you is absolutely wrong. That is not how a mediator functions. You will be sadly disappointed. If you've got a really good mediator who will not cross that line and explain the law to you, and who will not make decisions for you, that's when you're going to go wrong and you're going to be disappointed. So here's what a mediator is supposed to do. A mediator is supposed to engage you in conversation differently than you can do on your own. That's a mediator's role. A mediator has to remain neutral. And if they aren't, you have the wrong mediator, first of all, and one of you is going to feel like the mediator isn't neutral. So the level of expectation you have out of a mediator has to become clear. Do not expect your mediator to make decisions for you. And you may say, well, then what the heck am I hiring a mediator for? You're hiring a mediator to get you through those hurdles in conversations where you normally blow up and can't get past. That's what a mediator's job is, and that is much harder than making decisions for you. I don't know why a mediator would want to make decisions for you. Now, a mediator can brainstorm. So we're going to go into that a little bit more when we go into now how to turn this around. So now that we know the 8 points and how to ruin a good, potentially good mediation, again, lying, yelling, insulting, no legal advice, overreaching in what you're asking for in the negotiation, not being prepared with support documentation to actually have a good negotiation for something. The emotional divorce has not been dealt with yet, and expecting the mediator to make decisions for you like a judge. A lot of people expect the mediator to be a judge, wrong, and explaining the law to you, absolutely wrong, because one of you will absolutely think the mediator is not being neutral and siding with one person. So here's how we correct those things. Here's how to make it the best it can be. A, tell the truth. Tell the truth. If you're addicted to drugs, just say, look, I'm a substance abuse addict. Can't hide it anymore. I know I need help before I go into co-parenting on my own. Do you know how that would positively turn a mediation around? I haven't met one person in 9 years who has a substance abuse issue and not in the program come into the mediation and say, I have it. I do have that issue, and I do want to work on it because I want a better relationship with my children. I haven't met one person that did it. Everybody will come in and deny they have a substance abuse issue. Adultery. I am constantly surprised at how people view morality, sex, monogamy. Being a mediator in divorce has truly opened my eyes to different ways people deal with sex and monogamy or polygamy. I happen to think that most people have a very difficult time being monogamous, but that's just me. But telling the truth is essential to a good mediation. And when people finally get to the point of admitting truth, everything turns around in the best way possible for the outcome of the mediation. And you are respected for telling the truth, and you are appreciated for telling the truth. And if you aren't, then your spouse has an issue. Your spouse has an issue with forgiveness and blame. But that doesn't mean that you don't tell the truth. Telling the truth is essential to a good mediation. So how do we turn the yelling part around? Well, you have to practice not raising your voice and not dominating the conversation. So in every relationship, generally, you have a more dominant person than the other. And if you're getting divorced because the power dynamic is so imbalanced, the yeller has to change their ways in order to have a good mediation. You have to know you're the yeller. You have to know that when you dominate a conversation, it's horrible. The mediator can't do anything for you unless the mediator separates you, and that's what I've done. I will separate people. If I see that there is a power dynamic that is imbalanced, I'll separate people because I want each person to be able to speak freely without having to put up that emotional shield when they're being yelled at. I don't want the person who has to suffer through the other person yelling. I don't want them to feel like they're a victim in the mediation, like they're a victim in their marriage, in their own homes, because that's how people feel. And yellers, don't interrupt. You have to really learn how to control yourself. You are going to have an opportunity to speak. You really are. If you have a good mediator, they'll balance out the time for you. And so be calm. Trust your mediator. Trust the process. And if you can be calm, if you cannot raise your voice, if you cannot dominate the conversation, you really will have a very successful mediation. But if this can't be done, if one spouse cannot help but dominate, and there were those people with me, you do have to hire an attorney to even out the power dynamic or invite the attorney to the next mediation. I've done that with people. I've said, look, let's just have attorneys come to the mediation. Then you can manage the money you're spending with the attorney. I can even put you in two rooms. Most people are set up with two rooms. Most, not all. Mediators, I mean. And if you bring your attorneys to the mediation, the presence of those attorneys will even out the power dynamic. Hopefully the yeller hasn't hired an attorney who's a yeller, because if that's the case, you're absolutely going in different rooms. And that is the way we're going to get through the mediation. So how do we turn the insulting around? Number three. Well, first of all, you change your tone of voice to be respectful. And you don't demean the other person or condemn them or blame them. And you certainly don't bring up personality issues, behavioral issues, or past grievances unless they affect decisions going forward. But you do it in a constructive manner. So in the world of not insulting, now that you've got your voice calm, your tone of voice is a lot more pleasant to deal with, you're not condemning or blaming. Well, you may want to bring things up in a very nice tone of voice that embarrasses the other person. That's really a tough spot. So I had a mediation recently where he said to her, okay, honey, really, he did call her honey. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, but this is something that's really important to me in the co-parenting. I'm worried about you, and our daughter is worried about you, and that's your drinking. Now, I sat back and I watched to see how she was going to take it, because at the first inkling of huge embarrassment and defensiveness, I was going to move the conversation in a different direction. But she didn't flinch. She actually accepted it, which was quite unusual to me. But he did it. He did it in a civil tone. He did it from a caring position. He did bring up something sensitive that could have blown up in his face, but it didn't. That's not the way it always is. So I have to manage those things very sensitively. And here's what I want to say to anybody that wants to bring up sensitive issues. Why don't you ask for a caucus with your mediator first? A caucus means you ask for the room alone. Ask for the room alone so that you can bring up that issue without your other spouse sitting there. And let the mediator guide that portion of the conversation, how it's brought up, where it fits, or maybe the mediator will want to go into the other room and one-on-one bring that issue up, just so they're not embarrassed. And so if it's a real issue, like drinking, due to depression, due to whatever, you can at least get somewhere with the person you're telling this to, because so that that person can get healthy and better, so that the co-parenting relationship can get better. But I'm suggesting ask the mediator for time alone if you want to bring up sensitive issues that could embarrass the other person. All right, number four, not getting legal advice. Okay, you know how you turn that around? You get legal advice. You absolutely get legal advice, and you encourage your spouse to get legal advice. Both of you getting legal advice is the smartest thing you can do. There are a couple lawyers that I know that do not litigate. They're called collaborative lawyers. And I use those lawyers to talk with both people about giving them legal information. So there's a really tough issue in the legal world, and that is, and it can be a cause for malpractice. And that is the privilege that is established when between attorney and client when an attorney is talking to somebody and giving them legal advice. Most attorneys will only talk to one person. And if they've talked to your spouse, they will not talk to you. And they do that for malpractice issues. They don't want to be in a situation of making it look like they're giving legal advice that favors one person over another. So I call it giving legal knowledge, legal education. But also the attorneys want to leave it open to maybe representing one person if it really comes to attorney representation. And I respect that. I respect that they want to work that way. So I have two collaborative law attorneys that will never litigate and that also mediate, and they don't mind talking to both people at the same time. So if you're a couple that doesn't mind going to one attorney and just getting legal education, then I can give you those two people's names. But generally, each person, each spouse wants their own attorney so that they can really communicate freely, not worrying about the other spouse listening to what they are worried about and have to say, and just looking at all the options in the law that could favor them. So that's why most people will want an individual attorney to talk to them. But a mediator's role is not to give legal advice. Even an attorney mediator, a really good attorney mediator, is not going to teach you the law. They're going to assume that you've gotten legal advice, and they're going to assumptively start talking about the community property assets, the community property debts that have to be divided, until they see that you don't really know that because you haven't gotten legal advice or at least gone to Google Law School. So some people are graduates of Google Law School. And Google Law School is when you get all your legal advice on Google. Well, you know, Google is a very interesting tool for learning the law in your state. It really is. And at least do that if you have zero money to go to an attorney. At least do that. Look up the law on Google. Or go to the court website in your state that will discuss some portions of the law, if it does. So mediator's role, even an attorney mediator's role, is to engage people in a conversation that goes beyond what they can do on their own, because they break down in either fighting or they break down in, well, this is what I want. And they can't get past this is what I want, or they don't have enough options and alternatives to what they want. So a mediator will go beyond what a couple can get through on their own, and they'll keep the couple focused on decisions going forward, not focused on the ills of the past. And even though a mediator is not going to make decisions for you, they're going to help you brainstorm solutions that you wouldn't know on your own. And where do they get these ideas from? Well, past mediations, past couples. You know, I find past decisions, especially the creative decisions that other couples have made in past mediations and settlements, I bring them into new mediations because those are other people's ideas on solution. Or if I came up with something really creative that is based on the challenges that the couple is looking at in their particular settlement, and so much of it has to do with the house. Believe me, the house is the hardest thing to move forward. I can actually listen to what the needs are of each spouse and say, well, what do you think about this? How would this work? Well, what if you did this for now, and then that can be converted into X in the future. I mean, because I work with this on a daily basis, because other mediators work with couples on a daily basis, we can brainstorm with you. That doesn't mean we're forcing our ideas on you, by the way. Never that. I mean, this is your life going forward. You have to choose what works for you. But brainstorming could help you, the couple, then say, well, wait a minute. Okay. That sounds great. This part will work for us. This part won't. But how about if we add this to what will work? And it really goes into a cooperative, collaborative approach towards achieving a creative settlement. And now you're using your mediator in the way they should be used. Overreaching. That's number five. Knowing the law. And if you want to go, knowing the law is important. And if you want to go beyond the law and explain why you want to go beyond the law, if your ask is extraordinary and you're prepared to negotiate, you're setting yourself up for a great mediation. So A, knowing the law is essential. And maybe even saying in the mediation, look, I know what the law says about dividing the house. Let's use that as an example. I know what the law says about dividing the house, but this is why I don't want you to have your community property share. It's because, and I'm dealing with another mediation on this, you have the opportunity to earn so much more money than I do. You're going to be inheriting your mom's house. And I'm not. My ability to earn is less than yours, although it's very, very good. It's just not yours. And I'm not inheriting anything. So we've been married 20 years. I was looking at this as forever. Okay, it's not. That's fine. We're transitioning out of the marriage. But this is why I would like you to give up your community property share in the house and allow me to have it outright. Okay, well, that's a reason. You've now acknowledged that you know the law. You've explained why you're going well beyond the law. And in this case, it was an enormous amount of money that one person was asking the other person to give up. Really enormous. And at the outset, the other person didn't want to. But when we got back into the second mediation, the other spouse, it softened a little, probably thought about everything, and was prepared to negotiate. Okay, if you want me to give up my community equity, I'd like to give up less. So this is how I would like to accommodate your ask. I will consider it. But I don't want you to have this much of that other asset then. And still, you're making out on keeping the lion's share of my equity in the house. Okay, now we can mediate. Now we have something to work on. But you can only push your spouse so far in your extraordinary ask, or they will get an attorney and have the attorney negotiate with your attorney. And it will cost you money. Sometimes it's money worth spending. And the attorneys will negotiate something a little less than what the ask was. So knowing the law is essential. Number six, not being prepared with documentation. That's the killer. It stops the ability to deal with whatever asset is on the table to deal with. So bring your disclosure forms. Every state has some form of disclosure forms. Bring your disclosure forms at the very least to the mediation and have a copy of your spouse's disclosure forms with you. If you, with me, 99% of my mediations don't take place until we've exchanged disclosure forms. And you also have to open the disclosure forms. You know, you be conversant with them. Know what your spouse wrote on theirs and know what you wrote on yours. And maybe you both have to adjust what you wrote. But at least you now have both sets of disclosure forms. And if you're the one that wants to buy the house, talk to the lender first. Talk to the lender before you come to the mediation. If it's the pension, talk to the pension plan administrator. But let's focus on the house because that's really the biggest, hardest asset of all. Or dividing a business. Oh my God, dividing a family business. You should have done some research on the lender and what they need from you in order to qualify to refinance the mortgage in your own name. And you need to talk to the pension plan company, if you're the one that has the pension that's being divided, so that you know, for instance, if there's any part of the pension that can be released immediately, great, because that's a very negotiable line item. And what part of the pension cannot be released immediately? I mean, those are the two big assets that people really stumble on. And we can't get through the mediation unless the documentation is there and the research has been done. So disclosure forms and support documentation need to be brought in for the mediation. Number seven, not going through the emotional divorce before you get to the mediation. Okay. Do not schedule a mediation if you haven't forgiven the other spouse or stopped blaming the other spouse and stopped collecting injustices. Divorce has a grievance process that goes along with it. Just like you have those grieving stages of death, you have two more grieving stages with divorce. And not blaming the other spouse is one of the grieving stages, getting to forgiveness. You have to go through the emotional divorce before you go through the financial before you go through the legal divorce. You really have to, because if you don't, you can't really mediate, or you won't make decisions well. You'll just say, okay, here, take this, take that. I don't care. I just want to be divorced. And then once the divorce is over and you go through the grieving process, you're mad at yourself. You call me, or you call whoever handled the mediation or the filing for you. How can we change the decisions we made in the settlement agreement? Oh, shoot. Nobody wants to get that call. And so I want you to be aware of the emotional divorce and how important it is to go through those seven stages of grief. Scroll back on my mediations and look for the seven stages of grief. I have to do another podcast on them. It really does bear repeating. But you have to go through the emotional divorce. So when I see people in the mediations that are still raw, that are still blaming each other, insulting each other, yelling at each other, I just say, look, we need to put this on pause. Really and truly, you need to calm down. You need to realize that forgiveness and not blaming is so essential to getting through this divorce process. You need to do a little bit of healing first so that you can come to the table and without anger, without blame, you can negotiate. When you go into a divorce mediation, it's kind of like a business negotiation, but only harder, much, much harder, because you're talking about your lives are changing. You're talking about something you thought was going to be forever, and it's not. You're talking about the most delicate conversations and negotiations you are ever going to have, because it hits at the heart of you. It hits at who you are as a human being. It hits at the heart of who you are as a parent, as a wife, as a husband. It hits at the heart of maybe your religion, your culture. It hits at the heart of your relationships going forward, your friendships, your family relationships, and your relationships with your children. You really, really, really need to understand how important it is to go through the emotional divorce first. I cannot tell you. And I hope that I've impressed upon this so much so, because I have a couple that's going to be doing an exit interview for me coming up they totally went through the emotional divorce. And I've had several couples like that. And first of all, it's an absolute pleasure to work with them and do their divorce. It allows me to do my best work. It allows me to engage in positive conversations with them. And I kind of have that too. I mean, I want to enjoy what I do. I want to know that when you ask me questions and when I can help you think through things, it's really going to be beneficial, and you're coming to the negotiation with an open mind. And I can tell. It's so obvious when people have gone through the emotional divorce, and they're going to talk about all the challenges they had. It was tough for them too, and significant others were in the picture, but they did the hard work. And now they're making their decisions in the healthiest way possible. And lastly, expectations of the mediator. Understanding, first of all, that your mediator is not the referee of an argument. So this goes back to the yelling and the insulting. We are not there to stop you from arguing and yelling. In fact, it's so hard to know what to do as a mediator. It's hard to know how much of this you need to let happen. Is this just a short little burst, or is this normally the way the person is going to talk? So as a mediator, I kind of think I'm normal and representative of a lot of mediators, in which we know we're going to have emotion. We know somebody's going to cry. Generally, somebody cries. You have to be able to deal with that and let that be okay. You as a mediator, you have to let emotion come forward, but it can't be so negative that it ruins the mediation. So that, for a mediator, is one of the hardest things to know. When do you cut this off? How much do you let each person vent before you say, okay, I think I know where you're both coming from? Not blaming them is key. So even if one person is dominant in doing the yelling and the insulting, you have to realize, you know, there's stuff going on with this person that's having them behave in this manner, but you also can't let it go on. So what I do is, okay, listen, I've heard a lot. All right, this is good. I've heard where you're both coming from. Let's calm it down. Do we need to take a pause for 5 minutes? Do we need to sit in separate rooms for a little bit? No, Judy, that's fine. We can go on. And then within a minute, it starts all over again. Okay, maybe we're not fine. Maybe I need to have the room separately with each of you. So that works. So, you know, there's actually a nuance of a difference between saying, let's separate you in different rooms and I'm going to go back and forth, rather than saying to one person, would you mind sitting in the waiting room for a couple minutes? I just want to talk to each of you individually, and then we're going to bring you right back together. That's a little more positive to some people than I got to separate you. But other people want to be separated. Other people actually breathe a sigh of relief that they don't have to sit in the same room. It's actually beneficial to be in separate rooms and have the mediator go back and forth and carry the negotiation back and forth. It does have its limitations, by the way. There are certain things that I'm simply not going to say that I'm asked to say, because it would be insulting and horrible. Or I'm going to slightly rephrase what's been said, achieving the point and the goal that the person wants to be communicated, but not in the manner that they want it to be communicated. Because they just don't understand. They don't understand how certain words and phrasing can be detrimental rather than helpful. And the mediator isn't a decision maker. So the mediator is not a referee of arguments. God, please. And if I could never hear another argument again, I would love my life, and I would probably stop emotionally eating. Yes, I emotionally eat my clients' feelings along with my own feelings. So maybe I could weigh a little less if I didn't have to referee arguments and eat the emotions. But also, A mediator is not a decision maker. A mediator will help you brainstorm, but a mediator is not a decision maker. Judges are decision makers. Lawyers aren't even decision makers. Lawyers need you to make the decisions that they will carry to the other attorney if you have to have full-out legal representation for both of you. Yeah, they're not going to even make the decisions for you. So don't expect it, but expect brainstorming. So why do we hire a mediator? Okay, you hire a mediator to stop you from arguing, although we don't want to do the referee part, but you need a mediator to get you through conversations in a more productive way than you can do on your own. And you need a mediator to help you brainstorm. Third, you need a mediator to help you with the logistics of the decisions that you make. So let's just say you come into a mediation with some decisions. Okay, great. This is excellent. Now, there are logistics supporting each decision that people aren't going to think about. And so the mediator's role, and let's just use the house again for an example. Okay, we've both decided that she is going to keep the house and I'm not going to give up my pension. That's a really familiar trade-off. Okay, that's great. So is the mortgage in both of your names? Yes. So when are you going to be able to refinance to get your soon-to-be ex's name off the mortgage? Well, I don't know. Do I have to do that now? Yes, because we have to write that into the settlement agreement. Oh, well, what do? Well, you call your lending company. And now that we've negotiated child support and spousal support, along with what you make for a living, you're going to give that information to your lender and see if you qualify to refinance. That's a very, very typical situation. So a mediator can be helpful to you in laying out the logistics of what you still have to do in order to make that deal point work. Or child support. Okay, so you've come to a decision on child support. Great. So how is it going to be given? Is it going to be an automatic transfer of money from one account to another? Is it going to be Venmo'd? And what account to what account, on what day? So there's a lot of logistics to everything. And that's how a mediator can be helpful. But absolutely do not expect a mediator to make decisions for you or to teach you the law. It just won't happen like that. I hope this was helpful to you. There's so much that goes into ruining a mediation and making a mediation good. And I really wish for all of you the most productive and amicable mediations you can possibly have, because divorce is a new beginning. It can be the best worst thing that can happen to you. It can become the best worst thing in your life if it teaches you different communication skills, if it teaches you empathy and understanding, if it gives you a different level of awareness about yourself so that you can move forward and grow. And that's my wish for all of you. So thank you for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judith Weigel, your amicable divorce expert. Please share this podcast with your friends. Please subscribe if you haven't already. And please join me each and every week, along with emailing me, judith@amicabledivorceexpert.com. judith@amicabledivorceexpert.com. Share insights with me, ask me for topics that you would like to cover, and just give me in general how you feel that your divorce is going. I would love to hear from you. And as always, have an amicable day, and we'll see you next week.